The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Hi, everybody. Coming up, Nicole tells your fortune, looking ahead. So get out your crystal and stay tuned with Mistress Nicole. All dressed in leather, you won't forget her. You want to love her and you won't let go. Who's that woman, crazy woman, Nicole?
You can smell just like a big fat loser. You can reek like a repulsive fool, with a hint of sexual abuser and toxic notes of universal ridicule. If you like a fragrance that's psychotic, infused with rage and defamation too, a litany of lies so pathologic, eau de Trump is certainly the stench for you.
Woo!
May cause diarrhea, shingles, constipation, stupidity, incessant whining, adultery, halitosis, fathead, fat ass, teeny weeny, peeny, deceit, disgust, disgrace, treason, and comb overs.
Yeah.
Eau de Trump is certainly the stench for you.
Ooh.
Because every dictator starts with a dick.
Okay, I just had to start with that one. That was Bette Midler. She's done those kind of things before, but I guess she teamed up with the Midas Touch guys and did a little commercial for Eau de Trump, because every dictator starts with a dick. Yeah. Hi. Welcome to a Wednesday. I thought we needed a little levity to get things started. So to those of you who tuned in yesterday, thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. To the new listeners who joined us because of yesterday's show, welcome. Thank you for being willing to listen to two sides. Because you know what? There are two sides to every story. Every story. Now, I made a decision. So what happened yesterday? I was joined by Mo Husseini. Who's a guy who works in creative fields and has strong opinions, right? He lives in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, so he's on the West Coast. And I came upon a thread, a 55-post thread that he wrote that was posted on Threads, you know, one of the alternatives to the shitter. And I was so blown away by it that I thought, I really want to talk to this guy. You know, I look, my tendency is to fight. You may know that from listening to the show for any amount of time. I do argue with people. I've got a strong point of view, but I can usually argue either side. Maybe I should have been a lawyer. I couldn't have been a lawyer because I couldn't have done all the legalese reading. My eyes get tired. I fall asleep. I just can't. I can't slog through the legal. I can't believe I'm going to admit this, but it's like Shakespeare. You know, it's just not the vernacular with which I speak, and it's hard to follow sometimes. Anyway, what Mo Husseini said. Look, he's a Palestinian American, and he took great pains in this 55 post thread to really look at both sides and see both sides with empathy. And I thought, we need to have more conversations like that. You know, one of my biggest complaints and concerns is that so much of the news coverage, at least of the channels that I watch and the things that I listen to and read, is on the left, because that's where I am. And my view on what's happening between Israel and Gaza between Israel and Hamas, really, is nuanced. You know, there are a few shows I still watch on MSNBC, not many. I like Chris Hayes. And because now I'm on West Coast time, you know, at 5 o'clock, I get the 8 o'clock East Coast show. So I'll watch Chris Hayes, you know, as I'm cooking dinner and things. But because it records, when it comes on, I see like the last 30 seconds of Joy Reid. Now, you might know I have history with Joy Reid. We're both from South Florida. I've known Joy for a long time. I actually beat her out for a job some 15 years ago or so. You've heard me tell the story with Jim DeFede, who is the political news person in South Florida. In Florida, he is the guy. He works for CBS4 in Miami now. But he and I was his producer at WINZ in Miami when they aired Progressive Talk, back when Air America Radio was on the air. And the job came down to me and Joy, and I got it. So I wear that sort of as a badge of honor. But I knew Joy before then, and knew her before, and met her a number of times since, and we had a sort of friendly acquaintanceship. I was a Bernie Sanders supporter, and she was a DNC straight down the middle kind of gal, and we butted heads. And then she wrote a book. I can't believe I'm going into this, but, you know, hey, it's Wednesday, and we do not have a guest today. Stephanie said I didn't listen to yesterday's show. You should. Stephanie, she's in the chat room. Stephanie, let me ask you, did you not listen because you saw the subject matter and didn't want to go there? I know I'm all over the place today. I'll get there eventually. Because, look, I've made no secret about this either. I've lost a lot of listeners since I've publicly said what happened on October 7th, or let me restate, what Hamas did on October 7th with their invasion and terrorist attack on innocent Israelis and others who just happened to be in Israel was disgusting and sickening, and it flipped a switch in my brain. This non-secular atheist Jew, who's always been critical of, at least since I've been doing this job, of Israel, and certainly of Netanyahu, and so many of their policies, and especially, well, everything, the West Bank, I mean, and on and on and on. But what they did on October 7th was so despicable, especially having grown up with the stories of the Holocaust. This was the largest murder of Jews because they're Jews since the Holocaust. And when you grow up with the stories and the words never again, and this happens, and the world does not respond the way you think it should, I've been kind of shocked. So Joy Reid, every day, or whenever it seems like, whenever I go to watch Chris Hayes, I get her last 30 seconds. And each time she's going on about how I'm wrong. Okay, so I read Mo's thread. Oh, so the Joy Reid thing. So she came on my show to hawk a book, and I was, you know, I get animated. I'm emotional. I speak loud. I talk with my hands. I'm like this, right? She took it as I was yelling at her, and she hung up on me. I'll wear that as a badge of honor too. She was defending the DNC's actions in the 2016 elections. And I couldn't go along with that. And so I did what I do, and I wouldn't say argued with her, but I guess I argued with her, and she hung up on me. This is the last time Joy and I ever spoke. But so when I see her first, her last 30 seconds before Chris Hayes, and she's going on and on talking about there is no anti-Semitism in these college protests. That's
bullshit.
That's just bullshit. She bends over backwards to vilify the Jewish students who say that they are afraid, that they feel unsafe on campus. You can't take someone at their word? Believe me, as someone who really sits on the sidelines and just gives an opinion, I have been harassed and targeted and shat upon, figuratively speaking, by people who don't like my stance. And my stance, as I explained it yesterday, is the same as Mo Husseini's. Both sides are wrong. Now, I will say, I watched over the weekend the Sheryl Sandberg movie. It's called Screams Before Silence. And it was a pushback on this media narrative from the New York Times and others like Joy Reid, who say, oh, they weren't raped. Where is the Believe the Women? And if you watch that movie, Sheryl Sandberg shows you exactly what was happening. And she does it without showing graphic images. But you hear survivors. You hear the women, you hear the survivors of the Nova Music Festival who hid in bushes, motionless, silent, for 10 hours, hearing the screams of women being sexually assaulted, gang raped, and worse, and then mutilated at the same time sometimes. And that the world doesn't, I'm not saying that excuses what Israel's doing. It's not black and white. There are, I hate to use the term shades of gray after the terrible fiction that was written using that moniker. But seriously, it is not cut and dry. It is not black and white. It's complicated. And that's why the conversation on this program yesterday I thought was so important. Were there times I could have argued with Mo? Absolutely. Or to use his word, abso-fucking-lutely. But it was more important to have a conversation and to show that these conversations are possible and that we should be having them whenever possible. But we don't. We talk past one another. We yell at each other. We don't listen. And that's evident by seeing some of the emails and the attacks I get on social media and looking at the numbers of listen. Now, let me give you a secret. So in radio, for many years, I lived and died by the ratings book. It used to be a company called Arbitron. Now it's Nielsen. Nielsen bought out Arbitron. Arbitron doesn't exist anymore. And that's okay because I always said Arbitron was arbitrary. The way doing a show on the internet is even less easy to figure out how many people are listening. There are different metrics. Like I can see at any given time how many people are watching the live stream on YouTube. It's the only one of them that I can do that. Maybe, you know, Facebook and Twitch I could probably see, but they're minuscule. I can see how many people download the audio podcast. I can see how many people watch the YouTube video over time. But we also go out live on the Progressive Voices Network. We're on a number of internet stations, Netroots Radio. I'm going to go blank. But there's at least half a dozen online stations that either carry us live or run us whenever. We of course are live on the Progressive Voices channel. They're our flagship webcasting partner, I suppose. The show goes out in so many different ways, and other companies, other podcast aggregators send it out. I don't get those stats, so I couldn't tell you how many people are listening in total, one reason it's very difficult to sell advertising, which I don't do anyway. But so the metrics I do see have dropped precipitously since I've spoken out and said very clearly, I believe Israel has a right to exist. I believe Israel has a right to defend itself. I believe that the actions undertaken by Hamas on October 7th were indescribably horrific, like the worst thing I could imagine. And I believe Israel had a right to fight back, not by killing 30,000 people, but I got to tell you, seeing the images of the people in Gaza celebrating as those Hamas terrorists brought back their hostages, some of them with gunshot wounds, some of them clearly had been raped and abused. And seeing the people on the street cheering made me a little less sympathetic to them. And then seeing the very one-sided news coverage from the outlets that I, from the outlets from which I get my news, it really fucks with your mind. It fucks with my mind. I don't want to put anything off on you. It's been a difficult 6 months. For the most part, I don't talk about it here because it is such a polarizing issue. When I found the way to have a civil, friendly conversation with someone else who feels similarly to the way I feel, I jumped at it, and I'm so glad I did. I thought yesterday's show was wonderful, but I'll tell you, about half the people who usually tune in for the live show tuned in because of what I said the subject matter was. The emails I get on the subject probably run 2 to 1, people telling me that I'm horrible, that they won't listen to me anymore, that I'm a genocider, whatever that means. That I support genocide. And again, I push back on the labeling of a massacre, massacre is what Hamas did, of an onslaught, of a horrible war. It's war. But it's not genocide. Jews know what genocide is. If we didn't see it, and the precious few are still alive, who were alive during the Holocaust, that was genocide. People were rounded up and killed and captured and abused simply because they were Jewish. And it wasn't unique to the Holocaust. Jews have been persecuted for thousands of years. And I know we're not the only ones. There are other groups, other demographic, ethnic, religious, you name it, groups who have also been persecuted over the years. We've all got our history. We've all got our luggage. We've all got our stuff. October 7th was a trigger for me. And I'm more surprised than anybody else because of how critical I've been of the Israeli government. So anyway, yesterday was cathartic. It was... It wasn't difficult to not argue with Mo because we didn't have much to argue about, but there were a few things that we didn't agree on, and that's okay. We are not going to agree about everything. If we did, one, life would be boring. Two, this show would be boring. It might make life easier, but it wouldn't in the long run because somebody would be lying because we always disagree. So anyway, with that was longer than I intended to go on with this. Phone lines are open today. I do not have a guest coming on today. I've got a lot of stuff to share with you. I've got some actually good news that I wanted to begin with. Now I got to find where I put it. It was an email. Okay, here we go. You ready? I feel like I should have like a, I used to have a good news sounder. Let me see. I produced this years ago, but frankly, it's been so long since we've had good news that I haven't needed it. But here it is.
Tell me something good.
Good news blowing in your window.
It's kind of good.
Good news is knocking on your door.
Good, 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 good.
Happens so rarely that we have to give it a big fanfare. So we have good news. You ready? Here's the headline. Hit my inbox at 1:53 p.m., 7 minutes before we hit the air. Arizona legislature repeals 1864 abortion ban. Yay! So, you know, there was a movie many, many years ago where angels go, trouble follows, or something like that. I feel that's me. Today is the day that the 6-week abortion ban went into effect in Florida, where I lived until September. And now I'm in Arizona, and the Supreme Court here re-ups this 1864 law that banned abortion. Well, the Arizona State House, or actually three Republicans voted with the Democrats just last week on, I think, their fourth attempt to repeal that law. And today the Senate did it. Let me read to you. A territorial law banning abortion outright in Arizona has been repealed by the state legislature and is expected to be signed into law as soon as it hits the governor's desk. The state Supreme Court ruling in April reaffirming the ban sent a shockwave through the state, stripping away an already stringent allowance for abortion care up to 15 weeks of pregnancy. It took five whole Republicans to change their stance on the ban in order for it to be repealed. Yeah, there were three in the House. Representatives Matt Gress, Tim Dunn, and Justin Wilmoth sided with the Democrats to pass it in the House. And just today, State Senators Shauna Bolick and TJ Shope joined the Democrats in passing the repeal in the Senate. Here's the rub. This law banning all abortion care in Arizona will still likely go into effect before the repeal goes into effect because of rules. New laws don't go into effect until 90 days after the legislative session ends. So if this year follows a similar trajectory to last year's session, the abortion ban repeal wouldn't go into effect until October 29th. As it stands, the total ban is slated to be law beginning June 27th, which bizarrely means that we'll have this ban from June 27th until October 29th for no reason whatsoever except...
Bullshit.
Yeah, so there's that. But anyway, good news to start the day after a little bit of a diatribe. Spocko, hey.
Spocko. Hello, can you hear me?
I can hear you. I can hear you now.
And asking the people online, is there an echo in on the YouTube?
There shouldn't be because of the computer. The computer that I have you coming up on is Windows 10, just so you know. And it doesn't have that weirdness with 20 different audio inputs coming in that, for whatever reason, you know, uncheck themselves or check themselves so we have double, triple, or quadruple audio playing. So when you're up on this computer, it usually doesn't happen.
Good. I was very pleased the other day that Lisa Graves' audio came in because I had helped her with that.
She sounded great. Yeah.
And then we're waiting for
Marcy
to install the new video and audio. She said she had a busy week last week.
Well,
so,
you know, she did. She really did.
And I'm trying to make it so that it sounds good so that we can have some great clips because she had a lot of really interesting things that she said, which I included in a piece that I had up on Crooks and Liars and on in Digby's Place mm-hmm. on Hullabaloo, mm-hmm. which focused on one of the big issues, which was, okay, so Trump may or may not be jailed and stopped from his various different comments about jurors and witnesses, but all of his followers are still out there doing this. And that was a big focus that Marcy said at the end of her conversation last Friday, where she talked about Lisa Page and how she was threatened.
Yes.
And what I found really interesting, because I linked to that story, and I wanted people to see that was one of the reasons that it was important, was because the person who came after Lisa Page, the FBI had been notified about it, and they didn't tell Lisa Page.
Right.
And one of the things that came up when I put up my piece on Crooks and Liars, which I really like to be able to do, because I like to hear from people and say, what do you think? And a lot of the times people said, well, you know, the reason the police don't follow up is because they're in the tank. They're Trumpers.
Yeah, and many are. Many are.
That was one of the things that came up in the Lisa Page story, which was, you know, she used to be in the FBI, and were the people, you would think that they would want to protect her, or because they're pissed off at her because she made the FBI look bad. And one of the things that I really wanted to try and figure out was, so how can we, like the general public or even the press, put some pressure on law enforcement to do their job when the witnesses are being intimidated? And they're not going to do it with Trump, but they sure as heck can do it for all the Trump's cronies and the people who, like, you know, Roger Stone, who witnessed intimidation and threats. And I really was glad that Marcy focused on that, because every time I see these stories show up, when they finally come up, like Lisa Rubin came up, it wasn't until she heard from a group, an authority group, that told her the huge scale and scope of the threats to Judge Engoron's clerk. And I, you know, did the research. I said, who told us that? Well, there was a specific group called a judicial, judicial threats, a task force that looked at that. And I thought, well, whatever happened to all those threats to Judge Engoron? Like, you know, where are they today? Where are those people today? And this is another thing we find out is, when they finally arrest people, they don't put out any photos of it. And this is the other thing I'm trying to figure out. It's like, so what's the thinking behind this? And I was asking Glenn Kirshner about this. I said, so what happens next? So what happens if more jurors get threatened? And what's interesting to me was that he says, first it goes to the judge. And I've talked about this before, but what I really find still interesting is how law enforcement really is downplaying so much of the scope and scale of these threats. Is it because of who it's coming from? I don't know. How can we make a bigger deal out of it?
Well, not only a bigger deal, but make sure something's done. See, that's my concern, is these people are making horrible threats and nothing's happening to them. You know, there's got to be consequences. I sound like Trump. But Trump says that regarding women's bodies. If a woman dares to, you know, do the best thing for her life and her body and her health, there have to be consequences. No, I'm saying if you threaten somebody, a public official especially, there have to be consequences, and there don't seem to be any.
And the last thing that happened today, now yesterday, the news about the consequences, Trump did have a contempt case. 9 of them went through, and it's a criminal contempt case. And there was a discussion about the difference between civil and criminal last night. Andrew Weissman talked about this. And one of the things that it means is that because Trump violated the contempt, and he was charged with it, the contempt case, is that all of the other cases that he's out on bail on pretrial release, he now has broken the law, which they all told him, you cannot violate and break federal and state laws while you're out on bail.
Right.
So Glenn Kirshner says, so now is the question, it's up for Judge Chutkin and these other people. What are they going to do now that he has been adjudicated as breaking those laws? Don't know. But one of the things that he did, he was told to do besides, you know, paying the fine, was he had to remove from Truth Social and from the campaign website all of his posts, the 9 posts that were listed. And the one that I really looked at, which I was interested in, was where he, you know, threatened the jurors or kind of talked about the jurors.
Yeah.
So Marcy put up a comment from this guy, Benny Johnson, which is some YouTube guy who's got a huge audience.
Okay.
And he said, well, Trump has to take him down, but we don't. And it would be a shame if these were to go viral again. And Marcy put up in like she instead of reposting Trump stuff, she puts up a thing like jury tampering, like on his Truth Social line. And she brought up that, oh, look, here's Benny trying to, do some jury tampering. And so I pulled up the statutes and to say, well, what the hell does that mean? And what does it mean if it's someone besides Trump? And I think that this is the point where, again, we need to look at the people besides Trump. What are they doing when they break the law, and what consequences can be for them? So I'm going to ask, actually, I'm going to write Marcy in and say, could you drive down this issue about all the people who are doing jury tampering in the social media space? And she named some names on your call last week, Jack Posobiec, Mike Cernovich of MikeCernovich.com, and the other people like Roger Stone, all of his minions who go out and attack on social media like Twitter and stuff. And now that right wing Twitter is, you know, X is now owned by Musk, what are the consequences for them? And
none
that's
whatsoever.
The thing I'm really hoping to see. When is that story going to come out?
The good question. And see, there's nobody who's on that beat. That's the problem. First of all, journalism is rapidly waning. People are not, I think, going into the profession, number one, because they're not believed, sometimes warranted, often not. But, the attacks on the media, I think, have taken a toll as well. Spocko, I got to tell, I was having a couple of people ask questions in the chat room. And so Spocko has been, chiming in a lot in the last few months or by request. He helps me out behind the scenes and is somebody that I've known virtually for years. I think we met in person once at a Netroots Nation, didn't we?
Yeah.
That's what I thought. But we've known each other, online for a long, long time. And if you frequent other progressive outlets like Crooks and Liars, certainly Digby's Hullabaloo, you see Spocko's writing there. And you've heard him on other shows as well. But some people, they're saying they don't know your background. So like Dawn said, Nicole, I knew Spocko history. Very interesting and impressive. And I thought she was saying that you are. And I said, yeah, I've known him for years. She goes, well, I don't. So tell everybody a bit about your background, how, as a media trainer and as, some of my listeners may remember Joel Silberman.
Joel, I love Joel.
I love Joel too. Joel used to be a regular guest on this program. For a while, he was on every week and he would help me, talk about the media. Joel was somebody who trained politicians mostly, but business people as well and public figures to speak not only in public, but to do media interviews and to be able to respond to a question in a good, coherent soundbite that could be excerpted and run on its own. He was a media trainer. You also worked in that realm.
On the tech side. Yeah.
Okay. So
And the thing that I was actually planning on going to DC and work with Joel before he passed away, which I'm really sad about. And I think that I might, try and get back into doing some of that, but I kind of try to stay from the politics because it is spooky and scary. And I've actually just started this year talking a little bit to some of the people back on the East Coast about, how we could do some stuff and maybe I could work with some, progressive candidates. But one of the things that I did was I work with these, the tech people when they're starting out, when they're big. I, trained the founders of Google, Sergey Brin and Larry Page, before when the company, when they could fit around a ping pong table. And what I find interesting
when their slogan was, what was it?
Don't be evil.
Don't be evil.
Yeah.
They
and
need to bring
this
that
is
back.
Before they went public.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I know now from working with some of these people, I mean, besides them, so I've also worked with Elon Musk before he was famous. I worked with Sheryl Sandberg, who you mentioned.
Uh-huh. Have you watched that movie?
I haven't watched it yet.
You need to.
And the other Marissa Mayers, who was the head of Yahoo. Uh-huh. And I work with the people as well as you've never heard of, because it's the ones who, come to be famous. But when they're starting off and they will listen to people, if you can show them that they're putting their foot in their mouth and it's going to hurt their business. All right. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times I'd get hired by these incredibly, great communications women who are working with these people. And they're saying, this guy's a disaster and he's sexist and he condescends to everybody because nobody's as smart as they are. And he's going to go out and, launch a product on the road and we need to do something about it. And so I would bring in my former business journalist reporter, and I'd bring in a former tech reporter, and we'd just ask them questions. And we would videotape them seething on camera so they could see themselves how condescending and how sexist they are. And a lot of times it was just, having a good message. And then we would play back the video and they'd go, you have to work with dealing with these people's egos. And I've talked about this. I was on the Bradcast with Brad, and we talked about my work with Elon Musk.
Yeah.
And it was at the time he was trying to create a company that was as big as Craigslist became, kind of what Craigslist became. And he was very much interested in how the press works. And he had the same attitude a lot of the tech people, which is, if I can just figure out how to talk down to them, I can figure this out, which is, tech people always do. And we would videotape it and then you would see how he was just thinking, if I could just see how smart they are. And so I do a little diagram. And I said, the trick here is not to show how smart you are, but to figure out how much they know so you can come in at the same level so that you can either teach them or you can learn from them, because these people, they know when they're being talked down to and they're, get pissed off about it. So, and the reason that I was brought in was because his VCs, the people who are giving him money, they said, he's going to put his foot in his mouth if some of his, some of his views come out, and they're going to, trash him.
Yeah.
And then later people always say to me, when he became the, richest person on the planet, it's like, you media trained him. What'd you do? I said, when I was working with him, he was fine, because there was something that he still wanted to listen to. And now I could talk to him and he says, why should I listen to you? I get all the, I'm the richest person on the planet.
God.
What can you do?
Right. I guess that when you have that much money, you think you're infallible and that you know everything. You've got all the answers. Look at Trump. He doesn't even have that much money and he pretends he does and acts that way.
And the things change when you're at different stages of life. So I've also trained the people who became financial, the CFOs and the people who are going to be giving the quarterly conference calls. Those are the people, they have very different kinds of rules that they have to follow.
Uh-huh.
Those people, you do different types of training for them than somebody who's, a product manager.
Gotcha. I also want to talk about the other work that you've done. A lot of people know about Angelo Corazon, who is now the president of Media Matters. But when I first met Angelo, when I first learned of him, he had a Twitter account, at the time it was still Twitter, that was called Stop Beck. And he went after, he contacted all of Glenn Beck's advertisers and would say, do you know what this man is saying on his broadcast every day? And he got everybody to just drop their advertising almost single-handedly. I mean, he really, he was at the time in law school. So I've known him all these years, but you did something similar up in San Francisco.
I started this back in actually 2005, and you know, Angelo followed my methodology. I taught this methodology to a lot of people, and the reason that it worked was because I understood who it was who is, you know, buying the ads, and I understood what people listened to and who they cared about as opinion. And specifically, I started off with this right-wing radio program, KSFO, who were horrible and having lots of violent rhetoric. And at this time, this was before Twitter, best of that by the old days, and Facebook wasn't really around.
That's
so
right.
I'd write them emails. I'd find out who the advertisers were, and I'd record the radio stations like off of the air, like, you know, you turn on the transistor radio, hold a microphone up. But they didn't have the entire thing out there. So I recorded it and I embedded it in the email, and I used, you know, I had a website where I put some of the audio clips on. And because I have a lot of tech savvy, I knew what would happen. I would send the emails to the people and they wouldn't respond, but I knew that they clicked on the links, they listened to it, and then they would forward that email to their ad buyer, and the ad buyer would forward it to the agency, and the agency would forward it to the radio station, and the radio station would click on it. So I could see that everybody was listening to this,
right?
And they never responded to me. And I saw the ways that they responded and the lies that they told. So I kept modifying this letter that I said, you know, they were saying, well, it was out of context, so I include more context. Or I was joking, and I'd include more clips of them not joking. And one of the things they talked about was putting a bullseye on Nancy Pelosi's face, all right?
Wow.
And that was Melanie Morgan, who was one of the big hosts at the time. She's very, very popular
nationally. I remember her. Yeah,
you remember her?
I remember her.
She would go to the CPAC conference and hang out with Breitbart. And the other host was a evangelical, loved weapons kind of guy, Brian Sussman. And then the third one was Lee Rogers, who's an old cantankerous guy who was just huge, you know, sexist. And I cook all these clips. Like one time he asked, you remember Dana Perino, who was
She's on Fox now. She was the White House press secretary.
Right. And so they wanted to hire her to be on the staff, you know, and she should have, you know, full frontal nudity, you know, and he's saying this on there. So what I do is I take these clips and I'd send them to the companies. I said, now, this host reads your ad right after he talks about Dana Perino being in the office nude.
God. Oh, God.
And it's United was one of the people who did. And I said, United, it's like he's wearing your pilot's uniform while he's reading your ads. Now, would your HR department like to hear about this?
Yeah.
And so they started pulling their ads, and they freaked out, okay? So one of the other things that I learned, and this is something that I then used later with Angelo on Glenn Beck, is that once you start getting people to understand that these people are violating, you know, your own terms and conditions and stuff, is that you need to go after the people who care about the money, all right? Because one of the reasons that Lee Rogers and these people stayed on is because they made a lot of money for the companies.
Sure.
And unless it could be shown that they were not profitable, they were given a lot of slack. So my theory was, and I acted it out, was I showed them that it is going to cost you money. It is going to hurt your brand when you associate with these people. And tying the brand to those people and then showing them how horrible they were, it was easy for them to like walk away and say, okay, well, I can find other places to advertise with. And I also didn't want to make them the martyr, a free speech martyr. And this is a fairly, I don't want to say sophisticated thing, but it used to bother me a lot, is because whenever you wanted to say, stop saying something, people would go, well, I don't like what they have to say, but I will defend to the death, right? You know, and I say, oh, that's fine. You don't have to play that game here. And you need to understand that there's things on a private radio thing that they can do they have terms of conditions, and also the advertisers can decide. They're not the government. It's not the First Amendment.
Right.
And we're seeing this yet again. We're seeing it every single time that you come up with, say, we don't want these people to say this stuff. They go, I have my First Amendment rights. I got my free speech. And right now with Trump, what I'm trying to make people clear is that there is very much a difference between death threats online and, you know, saying something, you know, about politics. Anyway, so the point of this is I used this method and I then got so many advertisers to leave that they came after me. They started threatening me and online. And then they had all of my web page with all the audio clips taken down saying, oh, it was a copyright claim because they were owned by ABC Disney at the time. So I worked with the group Electronic Frontier Foundation.
Sure.
I knew they were going to kind of come after me like this. So I prepared for all the different ways that they would come after me. And I met all the criteria. I didn't have too much of the clips. I didn't have any advertising. I wasn't profiting from it. And I got ABC Disney, which owned KSFO at the time, to back down. I won a copyright intellectual property with Disney.
Yeah.
And that was a big deal. And I established for the people to be able to use these clips on their own shows without getting, you know, sued for them.
So you're the reason I can do that and I don't get copyright violated like I do when I, you know, I've actually got a clip that I want to play. So I can play this. I just got to share this because this has blown my mind. All right. So Nancy Pelosi, who is running again, don't ask. But you know what? Good. She's an elder stateswoman. The Democrats need somebody who they can look up to. So anyway, she showed up on Katie Tour's show on MSNBC the other day. Did you hear about this?
Yeah.
Okay, well, maybe some people listening didn't. I'm just going to play the clip and let you decide for yourself what you think.
Performance, if that's the word we'll use, what he has done.
Talking about Trump, obviously.
That would indicate that he cares, prioritizes, or ever valued or did anything to support a democracy. And now on the ballot saying he should have immunity from whatever he might do.
Yeah.
I mean, really... I have sympathy and respect for everybody who votes. I'm glad people vote. I know some of them will always reject those of us who might look different to them in leadership or the rest, and that's that. But there are those who have real legitimate concerns about immigration, globalization, innovation, and what does that mean for their job and their family's future? And we have to address those concerns. And Joe Biden is doing that, created 9 million jobs in his term in office. Donald Trump has the worst record of job loss of any president. So we just have to make sure people know.
That was a global pandemic.
Look at her face.
He had the worst record of any president. We've had other concerns in our country. If you want to be an apologist for Donald Trump, that may be your role, but it ain't mine.
Ooh, and he has the worst. Anybody can accuse him of that.
As a Speaker of the House, we put forth a $3 trillion bill. $3 trillion of investment in communities and the rest.
So
and
there,
that is,
okay,
stimulates.
So now people are telling me there's an echo on that because I'm playing this on that computer. Anyway, the point is, one, I can play that because of the work you did, Spocko, so thank you. And two, yeah, daytime MSNBC is really pretty much unwatchable, as is Katie Tour. Anyway.
Morning, Joe. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm trying to make sure that I'm bringing up some key points or making sure that this is of interest to people to go further on this. And it leads into the new stuff that I'm working on that we've been talking about recently, which is someone asked, like, do I get, you know, death threats or do I get, you know, hate mail? I have had to stay out of kind of the, you know, connecting my life, real life with my pseudonym. I'm not as good as I used to be, but I know that people could find us and find me. And this is one of the areas that I've been very much interested in doing, which is, what do you do when people get doxxed online? Or what do you do when people make threats online and they are, you know, coming after you? And the right wing is very good about always being the victim and flipping stuff around and changing the definitions.
And projection.
I'm not the victim.
Projection. You got to put that in there because this is and Trump's chief thing, and we're learning more about it with this trial and hearing the testimony from David Pecker. All the things that he accuses the Democrats of doing is exactly what he does. His whole fake news argument, that's what he put into place with the National Enquirer. It's what he was doing, and so he knows it's possible. So he accuses his opponents of doing what he is actually doing. They're not doing it. He is. He's the originator of the fake news that he accuses everyone else of practicing.
Right. And so what do we do? And by the way, you mentioned Angelo. He actually got sued by Trump, and he won that case. It was like something with he contacted, I think, Macy's, and Macy's was going to remove one of Trump's brands and stuff. And then he sued him for, you know, torturous interference of. And this is one of the reasons that I'm oftentimes working and talking with the lawyers, like in saying, how is it that you can deal with being threatened? Small people, they don't have the kind of money to deal with lawsuits. You need to have people protecting you. You need to people. And then there needs to be a point where how do you stop these people who are making the threats? And what do you do? And I've been working with trying to figure out a way for people to do like defamation lawsuits. So like the election workers, Shea Moss and Ruby Freeman, and trying to teach other people on how to do that so that when you're going to get the kinds of, you know, threats and defamation, you can do more than a criminal case, because as we've seen, law enforcement doesn't want to go after the criminal cases. And so this is, you know, another thing that I'm, you know, trying to do, but it feels a lot of times it feels very much, you know, I say pushing uphill, because even the media, they don't want to take on anything that involves speech, words, because they fall into this, well, it's political and I, you know, First Amendment and like that. And First I've written Amendment. About how they've gotten threats and how they haven't protected their own people. And this is the thing that I'm trying to get to right now, which is it's a social media thing. It's a profit motive thing. It's a legal thing. It is something to do with how we talk about people and how what we deal with people who violate the law, as well as the actual silencing of them, is really hard for us to do, because the word silence is used as a you can't silence
right.
us. Trump should be away from social media.
Yep.
His social media should go through the hands of every single lawyer that is on his case so that they can see he doesn't violate it. If he does, the lawyers will get in trouble. I mean, these are things that corporate CEOs normally do. And so it's not like unheard of, but he's given this constant, slack on this thing, because nobody wants to come out because they know he'll say, you're silencing me, you're gagging me. And this is something that's, and Marcy, we talked about this last Friday. We haven't come to grips with the scope and the systematic way that he has used the two systems in order to push his threats and how he figures out so that he doesn't get punished for it. And we need to do something about that.
We need to do something about a lot of things, Spocko. So, you know, this is one of them. It's the old adage, you know, throw so much shit against the wall and see what sticks. Within Trump world, there's so much chaos, and that's what they do. There's no way you could cover everything. I mean, I've mentioned on this program a number of times that when he first got elected and he was first in office, it really took a toll on me. I was like not only mentally hurt by it. I fell into a deep depression, but it physically got me too. And I was so stressed thinking I had to follow everything that was, I had to cover all of it. And it was too much. I just couldn't deal with it. I'll tell you, big weight lifted off my shoulders after I sat myself down, put on my producer hat and said, you do an hour a day. You don't have to cover everything. You can't pick a lane and do that day. And the other shit, everybody else will cover. Let them deal with it. And it's made my life simpler.
And you know, the other thing with Trump, and I've heard this before, is it is exhausting because even when you win, it doesn't feel like it's a win. Like he won the E. Jean Carroll won, and he got a 5 million to 5. And then people, well, yeah, he'll appeal us. He then lost again and got the $88 million fine. And so what happens next? He, you know, appeals this. And one of the things that I did really try to do today, Spocko,
he did it again. He actually campaigned today on the dark court day. He's in Wisconsin, where he was in regular Trump form, and he said, and the judge awarded her $90 million. I don't even know who she is. I never met her. It's like, stop it already. You know,
so I'm trying to look at how it is that at least celebrating your successes, and I'm glad that you allowed me to talk about this, because I and Angelo, a group, the Stop Rush group, on Daily Kos, used all these techniques, and we basically, in a lot of ways, destroyed the advertising revenue model for vicious right wing attacks.
And Fox, so what do they do? Still has they trouble with online revenue. Right. Oh, they did move to online.
Because it's like, you know, how do we raise money for this? There's a woman who I've talked to, Nan Jamal, I'm trying to think of it, Stop Your Ads. She's been showing how the Steve Bannon and those people have been sucking up the money online through fraud, you know? And so this is what we have to do now, is look at these ways that they make money. And I'm still trying to figure out, it's like, if you can, so that it's not profitable, you can do something about it. What we also have to do is acknowledge the fact that things are illegal, they're morally repugnant when they say them online, and that there is a responsibility and a right that we have to go out and make it so that this is stopped. And so this is the next thing that I really think that we're dancing around with Trump is, and also with Alex Jones. Remember Alex Jones?
Oh, people, of course. Oh,
we won the case.
Yeah, well, he still hasn't paid a penny.
Exactly. So what do we do about that? There was a way that we can make it so that he is not only, bankrupt, but also that he doesn't reoffend. And we haven't talked about it. He's the number one, you know, hit now on Twitter, because he's on his spaces and stuff going,
oh God,
why is it that allowed? What can we do about that? This is still a problem that I need to know. People are thinking about it, working about it. We can't just pretend that it isn't dangerous and harmful of what he's doing.
Well, that is very true. That is all that. And yet we've got a million questions. I'm not hearing a whole lot of answers. So, I'm still, we finally this week got the ruling on the judge's answer to Trump violating the gag order. And, you know, fined him $9,000. Okay. There's another hearing tomorrow.
I read that whole thing, and I've been following this very carefully. Which I like about this, it is somewhat of a problem, is it's 7 pages, but most people aren't even going to read those seven pages.
No.
They don't understand the whole history of this and why it had to happen and why there needs to be a different hearing for each type of,
because it's tedious. It shouldn't, they should let them, they should have let the new instances of him violating the order into the hearing last week, because now they got to do another hearing next week that won't go into effect until I guess you got to follow the rules, but come on, you know, come on, man. So there's another hearing tomorrow at which he could be fined again, but not jailed, because the last order hasn't gone into effect yet or whatever. But, you know, they're not going to jail him while the case is going on, but maybe I don't know what they'll do. I don't. And it is a different way of dealing with him than they would deal with Joe Schmo off the street. And I guess there should be. Although Trump keeps screaming, you got to come out and support me. I need to hear and see people. Where are my people? And then he lies and says, oh, the streets are all blocked off. You can't get close. Meanwhile, the good liars just posted a video. There were four people in the area for the protesters.
Right, right. They were there for like a college Republicans thing. And it would ask the people, so how old are you? And there's like 70. You know. I love the good liars. They're great fun. I really enjoy their work.
They really are good. Spocko, we got through the hour. I was going to open the phones to everybody today, but that's okay. I'm so glad people now know who you are, know a bit about your background. Although they don't know who you are, there's a reason you use the name Spocko. There's a reason you don't zoom in with video because, as someone asked, do people, you know, threaten him? Yeah. Because of what you've done in your past and the work you do, it's better for you to stay anonymous in the public space. So, Spocko,
I'm the most famous anonymous person you know.
Yeah, well, one of them, for sure.
Thanks.
Yes. Well, thank you, Spocko. We've reached the end of the hour.
Have a good day. Be sure to everybody to like and subscribe.
Please. Like and subscribe. And donate if you can. All right. Thank you, Spocko. We'll talk to you soon, obviously. Tomorrow is Thursday. So in addition to court being back in session, so we get to see Trump or hear about Trump sleeping again and farting, by the way. There's going to be another hearing because there are three or four more instances of him violating the gag order. So, you know, so it goes. So it goes. All right. With that, we're done. I have a song. I wonder if I should play it. We're in overtime now. So, yeah. Oh, I see. Okay. Stephanie finally answered my question there. You know what? I'm going to go out with a song. We're already done. We're off. You know, Progressive Voices is done. They're on to Leslie Marshall. I'm going to go out with a song. We haven't heard from the Marsh family lately. And the Marsh family, you know how much I love them. Those of you who don't know the Marsh family, they are a family in England. They're in the Kent area. If you watched, Ted Lasso, that's the area, right? Kent, I think. Anyway, the Marsh family is a they're a regular family. Dad, Ben, is, I think, an engineer. And the kids, well, when the pandemic started, they started doing these parody songs about the pandemic. And the difference between them and other song parody people is they all play instruments, they all sing, they're a very, very talented family. And now it's been years, and we've watched the kids grow up, and they've become more political over the years. And so usually their stuff is funny. This one that I'm going to play for you is not that, but it's really good, and it's really important. Even though they're in England, they still talk about the need to vote, to get out and vote. And so in this video that I'll leave you with, they are they're encouraging young people to vote. Sound familiar? We need to get this out to the young people here as well. Although, if they're not going to vote for Joe Biden, maybe wait until the next election, young people. Go ahead, do your thing. If you think that Donald Trump will be better for the Palestinians than Joe Biden, you're not paying attention. You're not paying attention. All right. With that, I'll leave you with the Marsh family. Kids, get voting. Here we go. Peace out. Young are quite embittered.
victimized. Disaffection's easy and it's ringing through the land.
Try to turn the tables, you're not that bad.
Jump on board, use your prize, yeah.
If we screw you up,
get in books or pay the price.
And then a board where there is apathy, citizenry abandoning proud history of advancing suffrage very liberally. Let's be asking how we keep our liberty. Are we snowflakes who bleed sheepishly? Who's been damaging the planet and society? Not by young or not by the economy. Knuckle down, no time to show lethargy. Use the ballot.
Oh no, the song ended. Oh well, you get the idea. Go find the Marsh family on YouTube. I think it's because I don't know. I don't know. But anyway, you get the idea. The Marsh family. All right. We'll do this. Take two. Peace out.